This is Audible.
Ashet Audio presents Dream Dark, A Beautiful Creature Story. Written by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll. Read by Kevin T. Collins. With an excerpt from Beautiful Chaos, coming in fall 2011. Chapter 1. The Story No One Ever Heard. Small towns are known for lots of small things, but they're known for some big things, too. Like stories that start out as small as the town itself until folks grow them. You can't grow tales any taller than we do here in Gatlin. Maybe it's because we're so close to Charleston, home to more haunted houses than unhaunted ones, each with a story more unbelievable than the next. Why should Gatlin be any different? And why did it take me almost 17 years to figure that out? Some of the things that happened to me in the last year, true things, were so big and so impossible, they felt like lies. I discovered my girlfriend was a supernatural, a caster with a curse. Lena split her 17th moon and claimed herself both light and dark. I found myself locked in a battle with supernatural creatures that could rival the ones in any comic book. It was just the icing on the cake that Macon Ravenwood, who had once been an incubus himself, found his way back from the dead. That was all before July. When we got back to Gatlin after our terrifying trip to the Great Barrier, the stories, the truths that should have been lies, got even bigger. One thing did, anyway. My best friend, Link. Probably the biggest thing that happened this summer, aside from the heat that wouldn't stop overheating and the creepy crawlers that wouldn't stop creeping or crawling, was the introduction of a Linkubus to the unsuspecting world of Gatlin. It was worthy of the whole front page of the Stars and Stripes, the biggest story no one ever heard. Which is a good thing, I guess, because if anyone had heard it, Mrs. Lincoln would have found herself with a lot of explaining to do. It wasn't like the Baptists had an official religious stance on immortals, aside from the heavenly kind. But the word incubus had some less than stellar connotations. Let's just say it wasn't exactly something Link's mom would have been anxious to share with the Reverend when it was time to give her testimony in church. Linkubus wouldn't have gone over much better. The way Link told it, the whole thing had dropped on his head out of nowhere, like the anvil that always fell on the coyote in those old Roadrunner cartoons. When I tried to point out that getting bitten by a hybrid incubus like John Breed should have been Link's first clue about what was happening, he shrugged it off and said, "You weren't there, dude. 1 minute, I'm sitting in front of my mom's biscuits and gravy, looking at half a pig for my second breakfast and thinking about my third. The next minute, everything changed." Okay, I wasn't there, but the way he told it, it almost felt like I was. Still, I'm getting ahead of myself. This is the story of Gatlin's first and only Linkubus. You won't read about it in the Stars and Stripes, and you won't hear it from anyone but me. Lena said I should write it down, so here goes. Someone ought to know, someday. It's the truest tall tale in town.
"Wesley Lincoln, you get that fork moving right now, young man. Don't you tell me this poor pig gave its life in vain."
Link was sitting in front of a plate loaded down with bacon and his mother's biscuits and gravy. There was nothing different about this breakfast, not from the perspective of the pig, anyway, or Mrs. Lincoln. The table was covered with the same sad-looking biscuits, the same thick white gravy, and if Link was lucky, there was probably still a little something left in the bottom of the jar of Amma's apricot freezer jam.
There was only one problem. For the first time in his entire life, Link wasn't hungry. But telling his mom that was like trying to explain that Baptists and Methodists aren't all that different. You might be able to explain it, but not to the Baptists or the Methodists around here. "Yes, ma'am." So he kept his head down, staring at the same breakfast he had eaten 100 times before, maybe even 1,000. The one he'd always liked until this morning. "I still don't see that fork moving." Though Mrs. Lincoln's fork was operating at lightning speed. Her hands flashed back and forth over the biscuits like she was trying out for captain of the Clean Plate Club. "I'm not that hungry, Mom. I think I caught a stomach bug or something." Link mustered up the most pathetic expression he could manage. It was the same one he gave his teachers when he didn't finish his assignments. They'd seen it so many times that it had stopped working back around 5th grade. His mother's eyes narrowed, her fork hovering above her plate.
"The only bug you've ever had was a bad case of head lice from playing with Jimmy Weeks after I told you he wasn't our kind of people."
It was true. Link never got sick, and his mom knew that better than anyone.
"If this is your way of telling me that you don't care for my biscuits and gravy, then cook your own breakfast from now on. You hear me, Wesley?"
"Yes, ma'am." Link scooped up a bite with his good arm, the one that wasn't in a sling, but he couldn't bring himself to eat it. He stared at the white gravy. It looked harmless enough, but it smelled like a heart-stopping mix of old aluminum, dirt, rancid butter, and worst of all, his mom's fingernails. He'd rather eat Jimmy Weeks's lice.
"Martha, leave the boy alone. Maybe he really is under the weather," Link's dad said between bites.
"Big mistake." Mrs. Lincoln dropped her fork on the edge of her china plate with a clatter.
"Excuse me? Did you say something, Clayton? Because I thought I heard you undermining my authority while you're sitting there eating the breakfast I cooked for you."
Link's dad swallowed hard.
"I was just saying..."
"I think it would be best if you didn't say anything at all," she snapped.
Mr. Lincoln knew when he wasn't going to win a battle. He'd given up and started waving the white flag at his wife as soon as their son was born.
"Not a word," Mrs. Lincoln repeated.
"I expect I can do that," Mr. Lincoln sighed at his fork.
Link's mom picked out the crispiest pieces of bacon from the serving platter and turned her attention back to Link, who had been pushing the food around on his plate while she wasn't looking.
"Now that you mention it, you've been acting peculiar ever since you came home last night."
"No, ma'am, I didn't."
"Didn't what?"
"Mention it."
"Don't you sass me. I was the one who said spending time with questionable folks only gets you a big fat question mark next to your own name."
"Yes, ma'am."
Link stared down at the pile of white slush. His mom was no Amma in the kitchen. Amma would no more sit down to a plate of Mrs. Lincoln's biscuits and gravy than she would bring home store-bought biscuits.
"Aren't I always saying that, dear?"
She turned to Link's dad, but she didn't give him a second to respond.
"I'm here to tell you there's no question mark by my good name. The Lincolns have kept the family name Spitshine around these parts for generations."
Link looked up in time to see gravy dribbling down his mother's chin. His stomach lurched. He shoved his chair back from the table, then sprinted out of the room and up the stairs.
"Wesley Lincoln," she called after him.
"Mom, I think I'm gonna be..."
The sound of dry heaving floated down the stairs. Link's parents looked at each other.
"That boy probably caught some kind of nasty virus," Mrs. Lincoln said. "I'm gonna call over to Doc Asher's and see if he can squeeze Wesley in today."
Mr. Lincoln put down his fork, hesitating, but I guess all the browbeating had taken its toll,
and he couldn't resist.
Maybe it was something he ate.
The look his wife shot him was so charged it could have knocked a whole flock of pigeons off a telephone wire. Without saying a word, she grabbed every dish she could off the table and carried them over to the sink. It was all Mr. Lincoln could do to hold on to his half-eaten biscuit.
I'll tell you one thing. People in this house should start listening to me. If Mary Beth Sutton had listened when I told her that husband of hers was as crazy as a wolf starving in a henhouse, she wouldn't be in the fix she is now. Sissy Honeycutt told me that she heard from Loretta Snow that Mary Beth told her he took their son Waylon's pickup and drove it all the way to Memphis, and they'd just gone and put new tires on it.
Link's mom kept talking as fast as she could. She had to. Otherwise, she would have to think about the fact that either something was wrong with her only son, or something was wrong with her only biscuits and gravy recipe. It would be hard for her to decide which was worse. Chapter 2. The Birds, the Bees, and Motley Crue. Up in Link's room, everything was all wrong. I mean, it always looked wrong because his mom hadn't let him change anything in it since third grade. She said the wallpaper had at least 10 good years left in it, and every good Baptist knew that vanity was the devil's business anyway. The Star Wars border around his ceiling was still there, Darth Vader peeling around the edges right above the cross with Noah's Ark and the animals marching over it. His basketball trophies, going all the way back to elementary school, were lined up above his field day ribbons. And in case there was any doubt, a church camp poster read, "God wants you." Only Link had changed "you" to YouTube in pencil, light enough that his mom couldn't see it if she wasn't wearing her good reading glasses, the ones she saved for the packages wrapped in brown paper that Marion sent from the library. Link liked to hide the glasses because he said it made his life a whole lot easier if his mom could only see half of what he did. Since I had delivered some of those packages with Liv and knew that Mrs. Lincoln was reading romance novels, I hoped she never found her glasses. And this from a woman who made us turn off the television if the animals got too frisky on the Discovery Channel. Link's CDs were in a box under his bed, next to his comic book collection and some back issues of Hot Rod magazine. But tonight, even his favorite comic, Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, and his favorite CD, The Best of Heavy Metal Power Ballads, couldn't distract the most distractible guy in town. All he could think about was his mom's gravy and how it had smelled like roadkill on a plate. It was time to pull out the big guns, the one girl who could keep his mind off anything except her. Ridley, his candy-striped pink and blonde bad girl with a heart of gold, or at least gold plate. Not that Link would want it any other way. In his eyes, and in hers, she was perfect. He thought about Lena's claiming, which he had started thinking of as Hell Night. It had felt like someone tore a hole right through him when Ridley disappeared and he thought she was dead. And then, like someone had duct-taped it closed again when he saw her alive just a few minutes later. She jumped into his arms and hugged him like she was a regular girl for about 2 minutes. Those were an awesome 2 minutes, the best 2 minutes of his life. But standing in front of the bathroom mirror now, Link knew something was different. He just couldn't nail down exactly what. His spiky blonde hair was still spiked, his lopsided grin still lopsided, his blue eyes still blue, but they looked darker somehow. Maybe his mom had switched light bulbs again to save energy or the whales, or whatever her friends at the Daughters of the American Revolution decided they were going to save this week. usually his soul. The longer Link stared in the mirror looking for all the things that were wrong with him, the more he noticed the things that were different. Maybe even right. It seemed impossible, but from what he could see in the mirror, the baby face the girls teased him about was almost gone, replaced by the kind of jaw that could take a serious punch. He felt like his skin had been stretched over someone else's face. A guy who was older, better looking, and bigger. Because he was definitely bigger. He tried to stand up straight, but he'd been slouching for so long that his body almost couldn't remember how. He'd grown at least an inch in about 2 hours. Was that even possible? Link wasn't sure, but he knew that when he tried to fall asleep last night, he had felt his bones cracking and groaning, like they were literally stretching under his skin. And his skin tingled, his nerve endings more sensitive than when he'd skinned his knees breakdancing on the blacktop. Then there was his arm, the pain that seemed to disappear overnight. Link was looking good today, roadkill, puke, and all. The extra height was worth a little bone stretching, or whatever was happening. Especially since he wasn't just getting taller, he felt like he was getting stronger, too. He glanced at the door, then flexed his biceps in the mirror. Yeah, he had some hardcore guns.
"Don't make me fire these puppies,"
he said to his image in the mirror. It was sort of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He felt like himself. He still rocked out to Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin. He still couldn't stop thinking about Ridley and becoming a famous drummer. But the body he was in didn't feel like his body. It felt borrowed or stolen, crazy as that sounded. Link splashed some water on his face with one hand. He was going to give Power Ballads another shot. He grabbed his iPod and flopped down onto his bed. When his back hit the mattress, he heard the sharp crack of wood splintering underneath him, and half his bed crashed to the floor. His heart sped up, but he cranked Motley Crue's Home Sweet Home, listening to the words he'd heard 100 times before, hoping they would drown out his mom's voice hollering from downstairs. The pee was warm and yellow and, well, it was pee. A few hours later, Link was staring into the specimen container as if it could explain everything. He was pretty sure it couldn't, but at least he hoped it would get his mom off his back. She was convinced his sudden physical changes were the result of steroids. Link shook his head.
"Kinda like Mountain Dew in the morning, after you let it sit by your bed all night long."
Since he didn't know what to make of his new physique any more than the rest of the stuff that was happening to him, Link gave up and screwed the lid on the container. He wrote his name on the sticker right where the nurse, Wanda Beezer, told him to. He still hadn't seen Doc Asher, but Link knew why he was there. His mom had made that clear, and it had nothing to do with the sling on his arm. There was no way in H.E. double hockey sticks you could ditch out on his mom's cooking and puke 2 minutes later without ending up in the doctor's office. Not unless you had a doctor's note excusing you from eating in the first place. If only she hadn't served the white gravy. Anything but that. Maybe he could have choked down pancakes. He shuddered at the thought, and the smell. Maybe not. What was wrong with him? He'd been trying to convince his mom he was fine, but he hadn't been able to convince himself. Maybe she was right. Not about the drugs, but maybe about the devil. He didn't know what was going on in his head or his body, but none of it was normal. Not that the things going on in Link's head were all that normal to begin with. Still, this was abnormally abnormal.
Are you taking drugs, Wesley?
His mom had demanded after she charged into his room right before lunch.
Getting yourself all hopped up on the marijuana?
The way she said it, you'd think she was proposing to someone. Marijuana? Link didn't wanna. He didn't want anything.
No, ma'am. You wanna go through my drawers again?
That would make twice in one day, but it was worth it to get her off his back.
No dirty magazines, no Harry Potter movies, I promise.
She hadn't thought his response was funny. He was just hoping she wouldn't find his Iron Maiden CDs. That would be worse than marijuana. She had her hands on her hips, which was never a good sign.
All I know is you're not eating, but you're bigger than Bobby Watkins. So if it's not the marijuana, you must be taking steroids, like those football players they're always talking about on TV.
Link had let his head fall against the wall in defeat.
Mom, I'm not an NFL football player, and I'm not taking steroids.
Her eyes had narrowed.
We'll see.
Now she was about to. Someone was pounding on the restroom door.
Wesley Lincoln, are you all right in there? Do you need help?
Give me a minute, Mom. It's not like I can press a button.
Don't you sass me, Wesley.
She was hammering on the door again, and he knew he was going to have to go back out and face her. 5 minutes alone in a bathroom was more freedom than he could expect this day. One breakfast left on the plate, and some gagging. You would have thought he'd shot a guy. Link pulled the door open. His mom was standing there, between Doc Asher and Wanda Beezer, all looking impatient.
Jeez, wasn't anyone else ever sick in this town?
Come on, son. Your mother thinks we should have a little talk. And I'll take a look at that arm of yours.
Doc Asher patted Link's shoulder. Wanda coughed and held out her gloved hand.
I'm waiting.
Link handed her the warm yellow cup. Doc Asher looked at Link from the other side of his desk.
You see, son, sometimes when a boy and a girl, a man and a woman, truly love each other...
Are you kidding me, Doc? I think I've got that talk covered.
Not that anyone had ever bothered to have it with him, but he'd learned all the facts of life the way God intended, by spying on the girls' locker room next to the unheated swimming pool at church camp. Doc Asher leaned back in his chair.
Don't interrupt. As I was saying, sometimes when a man truly loves a woman, he wants to impress her, maybe develop bigger muscles, show off a bit.
Are you asking me something, Doc?
Link knew his mom had probably already shared her steroids theory. Doc Asher picked up a pen and Link's chart off the desk.
Have you been feeling angry?
Was he for real?
I don't know, Doc. Have you?
Wesley, this is serious. The abuse of steroids...
Link stopped listening and started wondering if the serious abuse of your son's privacy would show up in the container, until Doc said something that stopped him cold.
With all the changes your mother's mentioned, after I cast your arm, I think I'm going to check for puncture marks.
Puncture marks? It took him a second to put it together. Doc was talking about needle marks from shooting steroids, but that wasn't the kind of puncture Link was thinking about. He froze, and suddenly he wasn't in the doctor's office anymore. He was back in a dark cave at the Great Barrier the night before during Lena's claiming. The fighting had already started, and he was standing between Ridley and John Breed, who looked like some psycho robot. Link wasn't gonna let John hurt Rid, no matter what. But just as Link was planning to rush him, the guy ripped, disappearing.
Link scanned the cavern, trying to figure out where John went. A second later, he knew. Link felt John's teeth sink into his neck. It hurt like hell, and it burned like it too. He could hear Ridley screaming, pink and blonde hair whipping through the air as she jumped onto John. Between the two of them, they threw John off, or maybe he just let go. But he left something behind. Two puncture marks, shaped like canines. Link sat in Doc's office for the rest of the visit, but he wasn't listening anymore. Link doesn't spook easily, but that same night he climbed through my window and told us everything. He was scared, and Lena and Ridley tried to explain some of the basic incubus facts of life to him, even though they couldn't tell him everything he needed to know. But I knew someone who could. Chapter 3, Your Average Superhero. Link wasn't crazy about going back down into the caster tunnels, but he had questions, and Macon Ravenwood was the only one with the answers. So I offered to go with him. It had taken me an hour to convince him that he wasn't going to burst into flames the second the sunlight hit him. Ridley pitched a fit when she found out, and refused to let us use the door in her bedroom to access the tunnels. I guess it was hard for her to watch Link morph into a supernatural while she was trapped as a mortal. If anyone knew how she felt, it was me. I was watching Lena become more and more of a caster with every passing month. Maybe Macon had a pamphlet down in his study. "So, you're powerless now, but you're going out with one of the X-Men." Link and I ended up at the fairgrounds again, wandering around until we found the outer door. "Your girlfriend's a real pain in the ass. It was so hot, I thought I was going to pass out. Link hadn't even broken a sweat." "She says she's not my girlfriend, but Rid's just playing hard to get." Link didn't sound like he minded the girlfriend reference. "Right?" "I don't know. Maybe it's different with an ex-siren." I pulled on the heavy earthen door. Man, could it get any hotter? My shirt was already soaked. Link shrugged. "I guess it is pretty hot." "You guess?" There had never been a heat wave like this in Gatlin, at least not in my lifetime. Folks were wandering around town, melting like popsicles in the sun. "I don't really sweat anymore. It must be an incubus thing," Link said, pulling the heavy outer door open with one hand like he was taking the lid off a piece of Tupperware. His arm had already healed at supersonic speed. "Pretty cool, right? You want to see it again?" Before I could say anything, he let the door slam in my face. A cloud of dust rose up from the ground, and I coughed. "Thanks, man."
"Anytime."
He yanked the door open again. I stared into the abyss below, pausing for a second the way I always did when faced with a staircase I couldn't see. But Link didn't hesitate. He jumped, landing about halfway down. Usually I was the one who went first when we were faced with a potentially dangerous situation.
"You coming, dude?"
Link called from the darkness.
"I'm right behind you."
How often did that happen? Macon's study was at the base of the stairs that led down into the tunnels from his old bedroom at Ravenwood, the room that was Ridley's now.
"You sure he's cool with this?"
Link asked, reaching out to touch the carved oak door. Before I could respond, the door swung open, and Macon was staring back at us through the green eyes of a light caster.
"I am nothing, Mr. Lincoln, if not cool, as you boys say, particularly considering the state of the climate in our fair town these days."
"I mean... thanks for inviting me down here, sir," Link stammered.
This whole incubus thing has kinda come out of nowhere and kicked my butt. No offense.
Macon dismissed the comment with a wave of his hand.
None taken. Though I'm sure I don't need to remind you that the term incubus no longer applies to my current state.
Link scrunched up his forehead.
Sir?
I don't bite, Mr. Lincoln. Not that I ever did. Macon opened the door wider and stepped aside to let us in.
But now it's not even within the realm of possibility. Why don't you come in, so we can make sure that you can say the same?
Link scratched his head, and I doubted he was catching more than half the words coming out of Macon's mouth. It was going to be a long day.
You see, Mr. Lincoln, there comes a time in a young man's life when his body starts to change.
Macon kept talking, and Link's face turned beet red. Guess there were birds and bees in the castor world, too. I was pretty sure I was going to have to do some translating until Macon finally gave up and said something Link understood perfectly. Something I was pretty sure he had never heard anyone say to him, least of all his own folks.
Let's sit down, Wesley. You can ask me anything you want to know.
The next time Link went to see Macon, he didn't ask me to come. I felt guilty about it, like I should have been there for him anyway. But Lena and I had been apart in so many ways for so long that we had a lot of catching up to do. When Link told me he took Ridley with him instead, I figured their train wreck of a relationship was bound to take its course sooner or later.
So I don't have to drink blood?
It was the same question Link had asked Lena the night he told us about the bite, and the same one he'd asked Macon the last time he was there. Link couldn't seem to get enough reassurance about it.
Ugh!
Ridley sighed dramatically.
Haven't we been over this, Shrinky Dink?
She was sitting next to Link, filing her purple polished nails. She looked totally bored, but she had insisted on coming along.
Sorry, Mr. Ravenwood. Lena told me some of the basics, but I was pretty freaked out that night, and I don't remember much.
That's quite all right and completely understandable.
Macon poured himself a glass of sweet tea.
And the answer is no, Wesley. You don't have to drink blood. May I ask if you've experienced any other cravings?
Link shook his head.
Not for blood.
Ridley stopped filing.
Have you been craving something else, son?
Macon asked. Ridley examined her nails so closely you would have thought she was a professional hand model.
Just a mother's love, she said, and a record deal. Two things he'll never get. Right, Shrinky Dink?
She made a little sound in the back of her throat that was probably meant to be a giggle, but it came out more like a snarl. It wasn't a good sound.
Ridley, let him answer.
Link wasn't sure he wanted to or even knew how to answer that question.
I don't know exactly.
He hesitated. It was going to sound crazy.
Sometimes I get the urge to... I don't actually know how to say this.
You can speak freely here, Wesley.
Link glanced at the door like he was afraid his mother had her ear pressed against the other side.
To watch people sleep.
Ridley opened her mouth and shut it again, finally at a loss for words. She was paying attention now.
Go on, Macon encouraged. It's only natural now that you're part incubus. You aren't going to have the same desires as mortals. Just be honest. There's no wrong answer.
Not unless he was taking a page out of Hunting's book and drinking people's blood. Ridley looked away.
Link ran his hand over his spiked hair nervously.
I kinda want to know what they're thinking.
Macon nodded. And do you know why that is? Link shook his head. Because I'm nuts?
It's an urge to feed, Wesley, Macon explained. You will always find yourself drawn to the thoughts and dreams of mortals, because that is what sustains an incubus who does not consume blood.
Ridley stiffened when her uncle said mortal, as if he was talking about her specifically.
So I have to read people's minds when they're sleeping?
Link asked. The color drained from Ridley's face. She looked completely panic-stricken, as if she was suddenly imagining Link standing over her bed, reading her thoughts. Macon laughed. He seemed to be enjoying the chance to show someone else the ropes.
Something like that. We can discuss the particulars when you come back tomorrow.
It wasn't a request.
Do I have to feed?
Link asked. Macon considered for a moment.
I'm not entirely sure how often you will need to feed, considering John Breed's hybrid nature. I will ask Olivia to do some research on the subject.
Liv had been lying low since we had come back from the Great Barrier, but from what we'd heard, she was never far from Macon's side, which basically guaranteed a lifetime spent out of sight, since the folks in Gatlin thought Macon Ravenwood was in a pine box 6 feet under at his Garden of Perpetual Peace. Macon seemed to like it that way, considering the small fortune he spent grooming his gravesite. In that respect, he was no different from the rest of the folks in Gatlin. Not that Macon would have seen it that way. Except his flowers weren't plastic, and his headstone was surrounded by potted gardenias and hydrangeas, rather than glow-in-the-dark crosses.
Thanks, Link said gratefully. I wouldn't want to starve or anything. I definitely can't eat any of my mom's cooking anymore.
That is unfortunate. Macon took a long sip of his sweet tea. Mortal food is certainly an unexpected perk of my transformation.
You know, it's not the sweet tea I miss as much as Amma's pie.
Ah, yes, Macon smiled. She brought me a beautiful lemon pie just this week.
Cream or meringue?
Cream.
Lemon meringue was strictly for Uncle Abner and the greats. They both smiled, Link at the memory of all the pie in his past, Macon at the thought of all the pie in his future.
Enough about pie. Get back to the part about powers,
Ridley said, annoyed. Speaking of powers, you haven't mentioned yours, Uncle M. What kind of caster are you, anyway? Not that we mortals have a reason to care.
I think we should focus on Wesley today.
Macon drained his glass, refilling it immediately.
There are some perks to being an incubus, you know.
Like the super strength?
Link was getting stronger every day. Just that morning, he had lifted his broken old bed off the ground with one hand while he was trying to pull out some contraband CDs.
Among other things, Macon answered. You're a supernatural now, Wesley. Your days as a mortal are over. And you have powers that far exceed superior strength.
Ridley stood up and walked over to the fireplace, unwrapping a stick of gum. It wasn't the charmed gum that could bind a lock to hold off hunting and his blood pack. It was just regular mortal bubble gum. Link leaned forward in his chair, propping his elbows on the table. This was the part he was really interested in.
What kind of powers? Can I bend metal?
Anyone could have told you that would be his first question. In Link's book, It was worth being part incubus if it turned him into Magneto.
I'm afraid not, Macon answered. But if it's any consolation, you can bend space, in a manner of speaking.
Huh? Hello, he's talking about traveling. Ridley's voice sounded far away.
Precisely. You can dematerialize now, Macon explained. It can come in quite handy at times.
Link was skeptical.
Yeah, that sounds sorta advanced, Mr. Ravenwood. Maybe we should save that one for later.
They were still talking when Ridley slipped out the door. Neither of them noticed.
And this time, they weren't even talking about pie.
Chapter 4 Mortal Wounds. Link climbed the stairs that led from the tunnels to Ravenwood Manor. Where the hell did Rid go? One second she was smacking her gum by the fireplace, and the next she was gone. He reached up and pushed on the trap door that conveniently opened into Ridley's room. The fuzzy pink carpet was heavy, but Link popped the door open with one hand. The second he cracked the door, the tunnel flooded with bright light. Link covered his eyes with his free hand.
Jeez, what you doing in there, Rid?
Don't sneak up on me like that. A door slammed and the light dimmed suddenly, as if she had flipped a switch. You just about gave me a heart attack.
Link was only halfway out of the tunnel when he saw Ridley sitting on the floor, her back against the closet door. She looked about as innocent as a cat with a mouthful of feathers, but when he looked around the room, there was nothing going on. Still, this was Rid, so he took another look. Nothing.
Why'd you take off?
Link pulled himself out of the tunnel, letting the trap door slam shut behind him. He sat down in front of her.
Do you really think I want to sit around and listen to you and my uncle talk about all your stupid magical powers?
She kicked off her shoes and began rubbing her pink and purple toes. Link was confused. Then again, Ridley was about as confusing as a girl could get.
You're the one who said you wanted to come with me.
She flipped her hair, an old siren habit she would probably never be able to break. There was something sad about it, like watching her unwrap those lollipops.
I'm immortal now, Shrinky Dink. You don't need me.
She got up, and he knew she was planning a quick getaway. Link grabbed her arm before she had the chance to run.
I'll always need you, Rid.
Ridley bit her bottom lip.
For how long?
What are you talking about?
Link honestly had no idea. Girls were like aliens, and as far as he was concerned, Ridley was their queen.
Just tell me what's wrong.
This. Us.
She gestured at the empty space between them.
It's not going to work. We both know it, so let's just quit while we're ahead.
Link felt the panic rise in his chest. She was going to bolt, the way she always did whenever he thought they were finally starting to get close.
What do you mean, Rid? You're my girl.
Ridley shook her head.
Don't you get it? That's the problem. I'm a girl, an average, worthless, mortal girl. I'm not a supernatural anymore. I'm a super nothing. And you're a hardcore walk-in-the-daylight incubus.
Quarter incubus.
Well, I'm 100% mortal. So we have nothing in common.
Link grabbed her shoulders. She winced, and he tried to loosen his grip before he accidentally snapped a few bones.
We never had anything in common, and it never mattered before. You were a siren, and I was a regular guy. You were third-degree burns hot, and I was 30 degrees below cool.
I hate to break it to you, but you were never that cool. Ridley smiled at him.
So how is it any different now?
Link clung to her smile. That lip-glossed, pouty diva smile meant about as much to him as anything these days. Ridley looked away. There was something about saying the words out loud that finally made Link understand.
Oh, I get it. When you were a caster, it was all good, but now that I'm the supernatural one, things won't work out.
He took his hands off her shoulders and shoved them into his pockets awkwardly.
Because I'm just some dumb hick, right?
She stared up at the ceiling, focusing on a thin crack in the perfectly white plaster. It was funny how one tiny crack could completely ruin something perfect.
You are a dumb hick, if that's what you think.
Ridley hesitated. Link leaned forward, his forehead touching hers.
Can a dumb hick do this?
He leaned in and kissed her as softly as he could.
Yes, and this.
She pushed against him and kissed Link as hard as she could. Then she hauled herself up off the floor and took off before he could say a word. Still, he was almost sure she was smiling. Link picked up one of Ridley's sky-high heels and stared at it. Usually, he just wondered how she walked in those things, which was the closest Link ever came to contemplating physics. Today, all he could think about was the box sitting next to the shoes. There was something familiar about it, but for the life of him, he couldn't remember why. Maybe he really was a dumb hick. If he hadn't been staring so closely at the shoebox, he might have noticed the light still glowing, bright as a flashlight, through the crack beneath the closet door. By the time Macon sent Link a caster key a few days later, Ridley and Link were back together again, as thick as thieves. I felt sort of jealous. Not about Rid, but about Macon. Seriously, I mean, I had saved Macon's life, and even I didn't have a caster key to the tunnels. You also don't have to hide that you're a supernatural from your mother, who doesn't even like Methodists, Lena pointed out. I guess she was right. Link didn't have to wait long to try out his caster key. We were shooting hoops over at the middle school court in the blazing heat, the blacktop practically melting into tar, when Boo showed up with a piece of paper rolled around his collar. 4 o'clock, Mr. Lincoln, the usual place. We have things to discuss. It wasn't signed, but we both knew who it was from.
What am I, a spy now?
Link crumpled the paper and tossed it into the green metal trash can. I half expected it to catch fire when it hit the rim. Macon is supposed to be dead, I reminded him. Link bounced the ball from one hand to the other.
Oh, right. I guess it isn't that weird then.
Only it was, and we both knew it. If we only knew how weird. Chapter 5. Priority Mail. 3 hours later, Link knocked on Macon's door in the tunnels. He wondered if the caster key would have worked on this door, too. He'd probably never know, since there was no way he was going to try it. Macon Ravenwood wasn't an incubus anymore, but he was still a seriously badass caster, even if he wouldn't tell them what he could do. Link was ticking off the possibilities in his mind when the door swung open. Macon Ravenwood was holding a glass of sweet tea. Big surprise. Pretty soon he was going to need an IV.
Mr. Lincoln, I'm impressed. 4 o'clock on the dot.
Macon stepped aside so Link could come in.
I believe punctuality is an entirely underrated quality,
at least by your contemporaries. As usual, Link had no idea what Macon was saying.
Okay, sir.
Please, have a seat. Macon gestured toward the pair of wing chairs in the corner. I apologize for the cryptic nature of my message, but the matter we need to discuss is of great importance.
Sir?
Link dropped down into the chair, and the wood groaned.
I need you to deliver an urgent message for me, Wesley.
Macon glanced at the polished table between the chairs. A heavy cream envelope was lying on it.
You want me to deliver a letter?
Couldn't Mr. Eaton do that? He delivered the caster's mail, too. Macon lifted the envelope and held it between his fingers.
This isn't just any letter. The recipient of this letter is a very old friend of mine, and this correspondence must reach him. It's a matter of critical importance, I'm afraid.
That part wasn't surprising. Everything seemed dangerous and important if Macon was involved. Link scratched his head.
Why can't you deliver it yourself, sir?
It was a valid question.
The route is a bit treacherous for a caster, which is what I am these days.
Right. Link doubted it. He might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but even he knew there weren't a lot of things that were too treacherous for Macon Ravenwood.
I need an incubus to deliver it, and my sister is indisposed.
Link was pretty sure Leah wouldn't let Macon boss her and her giant mountain cat around. That much made sense. Just like the idea that Link was the lackey in this situation. Link gave up and stopped trying to figure it out.
Where do you want me to take the letter?
Macon handed it to Link. The paper was thick and heavy and securely sealed with wax.
Barbados. You mean like the island?
Maybe there was a city up north named Barbados that Link didn't know about, like Cairo in Mississippi. It was possible, as far as he knew. He had failed geography a bunch of times. Macon looked amused.
Precisely the one, Mr. Lincoln. Although, if you take the tunnels, you probably won't get to see the Caribbean. Obadiah lives too far inland.
Obadiah Trueblood. It was the name inscribed on the front of the envelope.
You want me to walk to Barbados? You can travel if you prefer. Obviously, it would be much more efficient.
Link wasn't about to try to teleport himself anywhere. As far as he was concerned, that was like asking him to jump out of a plane.
No thanks, sir. I think I'll hoof it, if you don't mind.
Macon nodded.
Not at all. But you have to leave right away. I cannot stress the importance of the contents of that envelope enough.
Link stuffed the envelope in his pocket.
How am I supposed to find my way to Barbados?
Link had gotten lost driving to Charleston once. Another time, he'd even called and reported the beater stolen when he forgot he'd parked it in the lot at the Stop and Steal. Fatty hadn't let him live that one down for months. Macon nodded toward the door. Boo Radley was sitting there, waiting. Link could almost swear Boo was rolling his eyes as Link made his way to the door.
All right, let's get to Barbados, Boo.
The dog barked.
Get it? To Barbados? Barbados? After that, should we dial things up a notch and hit Barbay Trace?
Boo whined and turned back to Macon, who shook his head.
Be careful, Mr. Lincoln. Our fate is in your hands.
Now that was a frightening thought, even to Link. The tunnels twisted and curved in front of him, disappearing into the darkness, but it was nothing Link hadn't faced before. It could be worse. He could think of more dangerous things than the tunnels and whatever he might find down here, as long as his mom stayed above ground. His mom, and maybe that cup of yellow pea. Link reached into his back pocket and pulled out his trusty gardening shears, snipping the air a few times for good measure. He was making a habit of bringing them whenever he visited Macon in the tunnels. He felt much better with a pair of giant metal scissors in his hand, whether they were meant for clipping rose bushes or the backbone of a fetal pig in the summer school bio lab. Not that he'd ever done either. It didn't matter. Earlier this summer, he'd seen what those shears could do. Which was good, because Link was moving deeper into the tunnels than he'd ever been before. He passed some places that looked familiar, but his memory was never great to begin with, one thing the incubus blood hadn't improved. He recognized Exile, the club where they'd found Ridley and Lena with John Breed, and a whole bunch of dark supernaturals. Link knew he never wanted to see that place again. Luckily, Boo seemed to know the way. The caster dog kept going, carefully picking his way on padded paws, until they found themselves in the darkest bend yet. The farther the dog walked, the blacker the tunnels became, and Link realized exactly how well he could see in the dark now. "You're almost there. Just a little farther, and you can dump the letter and go." Link kept repeating the words silently, but he wasn't sure they were true. Link could see a long stretch of darkness in front of him, like an enormous black subway tunnel, except without the tracks. He tried to distract himself by whistling one of the Holy Roller's latest and worst songs, but the lyrics he'd been playing around with, about a beautiful ex-siren turned mortal girl, didn't work anymore. The ex-siren in the song was his girl, connected to him in ways his mind couldn't even begin to understand. He was still thinking about her cocky smile and the way she chewed stick after stick of gum, the way old Wallace Gunn chain-smoked Lucky Strikes, when he caught the scent of something unfamiliar and nauseating. Motor oil and rotten eggs and singed hair. Link breathed in again, gagging from the stench. He stared ahead, but the tunnel was seriously dark, even for a quarter incubus. And there were noises, not the harmless kind of noises, like your house settling at night. These were real, scare-the-crap-out-of-you noises. Ragged, uneven breathing. Something sharp dragging against stone. What the hell was that? Boo stopped walking and growled, the black hair standing up along his back. Two yellow eyes were staring back from the depths of the tunnel. Link was smart enough to know a dark caster's eyes when he saw them, especially after he had spent the better part of a year in love with one. But this wasn't Ridley. All he could think about was Seraphine. He wasn't sure he had enough incubus juice to face off against her. Boo growled again. The figure stepped closer. It wasn't Seraphine. He could see it now, but he had no idea who or what it was. As Link's eyes settled on the smooth, grayish-black skin, a part of him knew he was looking at a man, or what used to be one. Aside from the unnatural skin color and a head so bald it looked like it belonged in those alien photos, the facial features were completely human, except for the enormous yellow eyes, crazed and primal, like a rabid animal. It was watching him, its eyes widening with anticipation as Link's widened with fear. The figure stepped out of the black mouth of the tunnel where it had been lingering, and for a second, Link was sure it was a man. He was wearing ratty black pants that were too short, as if he'd outgrown them a long time ago, and nothing else. Shirtless and barefoot, his body was